Welcome to ACC Nation. We continue our Voices of Football previews with the play-by-play voices of North Carolina and Miami. Coming up in a few moments, Jones Angel will tell us more about Mack Brown and the Tar Heels. Then, in the second interview, how are things shaping up for the Manny Diaz-led Hurricanes? We'll hear from Joe Zagacki. Virginia Tech defensive coordinator Bud Foster announced his retirement this week. The story is at accnation.net. 17 ACC soccer players, 12 women, have been named to the Mack Herman Trophy watch list. Preseason polls are lining up. Find out who's number one in football and where your favorite ACC team landed at accnation.net. Coming soon, field hockey, cross country, volleyball, and next week, men's and women's soccer. And coming up between our interviews, we'll drop in to a Notre Dame football presser with head coach Brian Kelly for some observations on starting quarterback Ian Book. Now, a look at what Mack Brown has in store for North Carolina football as we continue the Voices of Football preview series with Jones Angel, the voice of the Tar Heels. On the face of it, the big change with North Carolina football is the return of Mack Brown, but there's a lot more. The addition of offensive coordinator Phil Longo and defensive coordinator Jay Bateman. And knowing more about all three will allow fans to have an idea of what they might be expecting this fall. So, Jones, tell us more about Brown, Longo, and Bateman and what they bring to the program.
Oh, gosh. Well, first of all, Jim, it's really great to be with you. I appreciate you having me on today and looking forward to talking a little bit about the Tar Heels. And, yeah, I mean, it's a complete overhaul for Tar Heel football right now. And, you know, Larry Fedora really had some successful years for the Tar Heels early in his tenure, and particularly in 2015 when Carolina was 11-1 through the regular season. And in the conversation, at least that year, heading into the ACC championship game for the college football playoff. But unfortunately for Coach Fedora and the Tar Heels, last couple years just have not gone the way they wanted. You know, only 5 total wins in the last 2 seasons, and Bubba Cunningham elected to make a change at that position. Bubba, of course, the AD here at Carolina. And so a little bit of a back to the future or something with Mack Brown coming in to be the head coach. Of course, Coach Brown was here from the late 80s until the late 1990s before he left to take over the Texas program, and did such a great job with Carolina football then. You know, the Tar Heels, the first time that Mack Brown was here, the Tar Heels were really in a bad position and had really just gone way down talent-wise in his first 2 years in 1988 and 1989. You know, they only won 1 game in each one of those 2 seasons. I remember I was a young Tar Heel fan back then. I remember just 2 wins in those 2 years. And but after that, you know, he brought in really up the talent level. And brought in some really good players. And by the time he was finished, Carolina was top 5 in the nation in the late 1990s. So he inherits a roster that's in better position now than it was then. But the Tar Heels will need some overhaul and some retooling to be sure. And he has really brought immediate credibility to Carolina and on the recruiting trail and just a different feel with the fan base and a real level of excitement around Carolina football. So it certainly is exciting to have Coach Brown back. And I think he's made 2 really, really strong hires in those 2 coordinator positions. You know, Jay Bateman, I'll start on the defensive side. He probably has the biggest job right now as a Tar Heel assistant coach, because I think the defensive side is where the Tar Heels are struggling the most right now, just with talent and depth. And that's where they're going to really need to be coached up, if you will. And I think that's a big reason why Jay Bateman is here. You know, he has really had a lot of success at his previous stops, maybe not with the most talented guys in the world athletically, but still been able to put up some really impressive numbers. Of course, his last stop was at Army. Really did a great job up there with the Black Knights. And I think, again, that's a big reason why he is here, is that he was able to get Army in a really strong defensive position. They do it with a really impressive scheme. It's very multiple. You're bringing different guys on almost every single play. You're trying to confuse the offense with the different looks that you're giving them. You're bringing a lot of pressure. and he was able to use the scheme to maybe hide the fact that you don't have the same level of athlete all the time at Army that you would at maybe some of your competition there. And so really been impressed with Jay Bateman to this point. Of course, Carolina hadn't even played a game yet, but Coach Bateman, really his resume and from what I know of talking with him here over the last several months has been really impressive. And then you have Phil Longo, who comes from that Mike Leach tree of coaches where it is an air raid base to what he wants to do offensively, but maybe not to the extreme that Mike Leach likes to run it. I don't think you're going to see Carolina throwing the ball all over the place all the time. I think what Phil Longo has prided himself on and what attracted him to Mack Brown as an offensive coordinator is his desire to have a strong run game in addition to the ability to spread the field like most everybody needs and wants to do at the college level at this point. In this iteration of college football. And so that's what Carolina wants to do. They keep mentioning Oklahoma and the way that Oklahoma plays offense. And Lincoln Riley, of course, such a terrific offensive mind there as the head coach of the Sooners, to keep that ability to have a power rushing game but still be able to spread the field. And so I think that's the goal for Carolina offensively. They're in a little better position personnel-wise on the offensive side of the ball. I would expect them to be able to move the ball at a decent clip this year. And so it's an exciting time, a lot of fresh faces, a lot of possibilities for the Tar Heels, and they're excited to get going here in a couple of weeks with training camp.
We'll get into a little more of the details of the offense and defense here in just a moment. Brown is an excellent recruiter, and he's proving that already. There are lots of great players right there in his backyard. Is he finding North Carolina recruits receptive?
I think so, and it's interesting. I think that is mentioning Mack Brown the first time around. I really think that's where Coach Brown built Carolina football in the 90s was within the state of North Carolina. That's not to say that every single good player that Carolina had during that time period was a North Carolina native, because that's not true. But what Mack Brown did, better than any coach certainly in the last, 30 years or so at least, is he was able to lock down the state. He was able to bring a large majority of the best players in the state of North Carolina wanted to go to the University of North Carolina. And I think that is one of the things, when we were talking about Larry Fedora earlier, I think that's one of the things that slipped under Coach Fedora, unfortunately, and I think ultimately led to Carolina making a change there at that position, was that Carolina was not competing in recruiting at the level it wanted to in the state. And the state of North Carolina has some really talented kids. You know, there are really good high school programs in this state. There are a lot of good football players in the state of North Carolina. You can build the core of your roster and compete at a very high level, compete for ACC championships if you are keeping the best kids in North Carolina home. And so that has really been a key focus of Mack Brown here in the first 6 to 8 months of his second tenure in Chapel Hill, is trying the best to lock down the state. And he's brought in some terrific recruiters on his assistant coaching staff, including Tim Brewster, who's the tight ends coach and coordinating the recruiting efforts for Carolina. Coach Brewster, a fantastic recruiter at Carolina. Earlier when he was here with Mack Brown, he's been at Florida State and Texas A&M most recently and has done a terrific job there as well. And so he's really spearheading that effort from the assistant coach side of things, but you've got some really good recruiters in there, guys like Lonnie Galloway and Dre Bly, a former great Tar Heel All-American defensive back. And so that's really been a heavy focus so far for the Tar Heels, and you have seen the results. You have seen some really high-level kids. In fact, just a week or two ago, Carolina picked up a big defensive line commitment from the Greensboro area. And so that's the kind of thing that has started to turn the tide for the Tar Heels in this state recruiting-wise. And so they've made a key focus to try to keep teams like Clemson, keep teams like Virginia Tech out of the state of North Carolina in recruiting and instead make sure that those kids stay home. And so I think on the recruiting trail, for sure, that has been the number one focus to this point. And they're starting to see some results. They'd like to continue that momentum, and they'll need to have a solid season to do it. But that's really been a heavy focus so far.
Let's head to the sidelines and take a look, a closer look at what's on the field. And we'll begin with special teams. Daz Newsom, an immense threat as a return man. But as I look at the roster, there's a question mark around the kicking game. Fill us in.
Yeah, Tar Heels will be will have to replace both the kicker and punter position. In fact, I know coming out of Carolina's spring football session, that was an area that the coaches were still pretty concerned. You know, they had a lot of candidates at both spots, but they didn't necessarily have their answer yet. And I don't think that answer will be found until here after a few weeks of training camp coming up, starting in early August. And so I think both those positions are ones that the Tar Heels will continue to see a lot of activity and continue to see a lot of guys get chances. And they want to see somebody grab that position and really make it their own. And Carolina's been pretty fortunate at the kicker spot. They've had some just place kicker. Carolina's been very good at that position with a year or two maybe that it slipped some, but really for a long time, Carolina's had some high-level kickers. Both the Barth brothers, Connor Barth, Casey Barth, excellent kickers at Carolina, and they've really held down that position along with some others over the last several seasons. But you mentioned Daz Newsom, and that is something that under Larry Fedora, Carolina was I thought, consistently one of the best in the conference, if not the country, in, and that was the return game, both kick return and punt return, and they had some really high-level guys at those positions. T.J. Logan, who's now at the Arizona Cardinals, was one of a really good running back for the Tar Heels, was excellent in the kickoff return aspect of things, had multiple kickoff return touchdowns. Anthony Ratliff Williams, who just left Carolina after last season and is now in the pros, I believe, with the Titans. He was a terrific kick returner as well, had a couple of kick return touchdowns two seasons ago. Ryan Switzer now with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Switz is one of the best ever for the Tar Heels as far as punt returns and his ability to really electrify the crowd at that spot. And Daz Newsom slid into that position last year and really became a big threat, had a huge punt return touchdown against Syracuse. That was key in that game for the Tar Heels, a game that honestly Carolina felt like it should win but saw slip away near the end. But that was a spot where the Tar Heels were very, very consistently good, was they always were dangerous in that return game. And certainly they have those type of athletes again that have the ability to be good there, whether it's Newsom or Rontavious Groves or some others, that they have some guys who can be big in that area. And I know they hope that's a strength this upcoming season.
Let's take a look now at the defense. He's played a big role in slowing down the Tar Heels last season. The line did well on pass rushing, but was sketchy on stopping the run. 2 of 6 returns. Strobridge, Fox, there's a couple of names, Gill, Collins, Lawler. Fill in the missing pieces for us.
Yeah, I wish I could. I think a lot of Tar Heel coaches included wish they could there. And you said slowed the Tar Heels down this past year. Unfortunately, I think that's been a problem for Carolina for a while now. And that's something that when Mack Brown left Carolina the first time in the late 90s, that's where the Tar Heels were really dominant. They were good on offense, but they were dominant on defense. And that's really where he built the program the first time around. Just some outstanding players for Carolina in that time period. Guys like Bonnie Holiday and Brian Simmons and Ebenezer Ecubon and Quincy Monk. And I mean, just some really great linebackers and defensive line, Marcus Jones. I mean, you could just go on and on with some of these guys, even earlier in the 90s with Dwight Hollier and Rich Steinbacher. And that's not even to mention guys like Robert Williams and Omar Brown and Dre Bly in the secondary. That's where he built it. And so I think I would not be surprised to see the Tar Heels really start picking up in that area. And in fact, we were talking about recruiting a couple of questions ago. Yeah, I think that's really been a big focus for the Tar Heels, has been that defensive side of the ball, because I think right now the coaches feel as though that's where they're struggling the most as far as depth and just overall talent. Now, the front line, the first 11 for Carolina defensively, I think is pretty good and is one that you can compete at the ACC level with what Carolina has in that front 11 defensively. But after that is where the Tar Heels really start to see a big drop-off. And they just don't have the depth they want right now on the defensive side of the ball. And I think that's every position. That's up front, that's in the middle, that's in the back end as well. And so I think that's a real big focus right now for Carolina, is to try to make sure on the recruiting trail that they can build up that talent and depth on the defensive side. Now, you mentioned a couple of guys there. You know, Jason Strober's very good player on the defensive line. Jake Lawler, good young guy for the Tar Heels. Zach Gill, a big recruiting win for them a couple of years ago that they hope will continue to mature and be able to give them some quality snaps. Tamon Fox, an all-ACC caliber player, I think, at an end position. Aaron Crawford, who has battled injuries a ton these last few seasons for the Tar Heels. They'd love for him to have a healthy year and be a stalwart in the middle of that defensive line. Miles Dorn, a really good safety for Carolina. Big recruiting win several years ago. His dad, Torin Dorn, a terrific player here with the Tar Heels in the late 80s as well. And so they have some pieces there, but not enough. And so that's where they'll continue, I think, to really hit the recruiting side of things hard, is on that defensive side. And I'll go back to what we talked about with Jay Bateman. I think that's, again, a big reason why Coach Bateman is here, is he's been so good at building defenses to the talent that he has and using a really impressive scheme to his advantage. And the Tar Heels hope that's the case this upcoming season.
So we'll jump over to the offense. Longo has a penchant for an up-tempo game and keeping defenses on their toes. At quarterback, the chatter is all about freshman Sam Howell, but no, there's other names to talk about. So tell us more, and has Brown settled on a starter?
They're nowhere close to settling on a starter at the quarterback position, but I will say Carolina's really excited about the level of talent they have in the room. They have three really good, really young guys. You mentioned Sam Howell, a big-time recruiting win for Carolina. Right after Mac Brown arrived, was able to flip Sam Howell from Florida State to Carolina. And a true freshman, went through spring ball and is a talented young guy, to be sure, but is just a freshman. And so have to wait and see how ready he is. But it is not Sam Howell and nobody else. They have two really good redshirt freshmen as well in Cade Fortin and Jace Reuter, both of whom who played some last year for the Tar Heels. And unfortunately, it was just a freak couple of seasons for Carolina offensive or injury-wise, and those two guys really embody it. You know, finally Carolina pulled the trigger a couple of times last year to put in those young quarterbacks. The first game Cade Fortin started against Virginia Tech, was playing well in the first half and then was injured right at the end of the first half and missed the majority of the season, did come back and play in the final regular season game against NC State. Jace Reuter, Carolina finally pulled the trigger, put him in against Georgia Tech. He was moving the ball, and gosh, it was either the first or the second drive that he was in, and he was injured and lost for the season. And so while they each did get a little bit of experience, neither one of them went over with the new redshirt rules. Neither one of them played enough that they had to burn that redshirt. So they each have a little bit of game experience. Yeah, I think Cade Fortin is probably the most seasoned of the three, even though that seasoning is only a couple of games, has a really good strong arm. Jace Reuter is very mobile in the pocket. He is just one of those guys that tends to other people tend to gravitate towards him for whatever reason. And I think that's a great quality to have, certainly at your quarterback spot. And then Sam Howell, I mean, Howell's probably the most talented of the three, but is just so young right now. But he certainly has all the qualities that you're looking for in a quarterback, both in his presence and in his physical ability. So it's going to be really interesting to see. It was in spring, after the first couple of practices, the coaches thought, gosh, all these guys just look like they're pressing so much. And so got them into a room and said, look, we are not going to choose a starter after this spring. You guys are all even all spring long. Just go out there and learn the offense, you know, relax a little bit, get more comfortable with what we're trying to do. And after that, I think you saw a little bit of a weight lifted off all three of those guys' shoulders, that they knew that it wasn't an immediate tryout that they were in the middle of, that it was more of a learning period for all of them. And so you saw them all grow as spring went along. And quite honestly, they played rock, paper, scissors to see who would start the spring game. And so it was it was a very much more relaxed feel after that. And so, you know, that'll come, you know, a couple of weeks into training camp. Those coaches are going to have to make a tough decision, and they'll make that choice. But they are not nowhere close right now to making that call as far as who the starter is there.
Running back roster, it looks pretty solid. Williams, Carter, and others provide threats not only running but as receivers out of the backfield. Tell us a little more about that roster.
I think that's maybe the strongest position for Carolina right now when you add in everything, talent, depth, just straight ability. I think the running back spot is probably it. You know, Javonte Williams, a really good young back, was really lightly recruited. Carolina was one of his was his first and only, I believe, Power 5 offer. But he has really come in and impressed. Antonio Williams, the transfer from Ohio State, a North Carolina native, really solid, older back, good player, and somebody that Carolina feels very good about. And then Michael Carter is as dynamic as anybody Carolina has with the ball in his hands and in space. And just an excellent player out of the state of Florida, he's that guy who can take a 7-yard run and make it a 70-yard run for a touchdown. And I'll give you another name. British Brooks is a walk-on for Carolina, but somebody who really caught the Tar Heel coach's eyes during spring practice and always runs hard, always gives it everything that he has. And I wouldn't be surprised to at least see him in the mix a little bit for the Tar Heels at that spot. And so I think they feel really good about the running back position with the talent, the number of guys that they have. They feel like they have plenty of options there at the tailback spot.
Let's look at wide receivers. 7 returned from last year, and this has the potential to be a real strength for the Tar Heels. Your thoughts?
I think, you know, a couple of years ago, Carolina was really, really good at wide receiver. They had Mac Hollins, who's now with the Philadelphia Eagles. They had Bug Howard, who's been bouncing around professional football some since he left Carolina. Ryan Switzer, who we mentioned earlier. So, I mean, they had pro guys at that wide receiver spot. These last two seasons, they really had to renew the talent pool there at the receiver position through recruiting and let those young players get a lot of reps. And I think you started to see that growth at that position last year as some of those young receivers started to get their feet underneath them a little bit. And, you know, they had played several games at this point, and they really started looking more comfortable at that spot. And so you have guys like Daz Newsome, you have Rontavious Groves, who's suffered a couple of big injuries during his time at Carolina and is hoping to have a really exciting year and healthy year. Antoine Green, who was just coming into his own last season before suffering a leg injury. Bo Corrales, big body at the receiver position, who can really go up in the air and get the football. And the Tar Heels brought in a couple of young guys at that receiver position as well. And so for the most part, that is a younger group, but I think it is a group that is starting to come together a little bit. And you can see the potential is there at the wide receiver spot. It just now has to happen on a more consistent basis, and those guys have to give you more production game in and game out. But certainly the talent is there. It's young talent, but it is there, and you hope that it takes a step forward for the Heels.
Let's take a look at the schedule. Interesting start. South Carolina, then lots of challenges in the ACC right up front, second week in Miami, 2 weeks after that, Clemson, October 19th, Virginia Tech, season finale, NC State on the 30th of November. Give us your thoughts on the games on this schedule.
It's a tough schedule for the Tar Heels. I may have this wrong, but of the 12 opponents, it's either 10 or 11 of them played in bowl games a season ago. So Carolina is facing some teams that have been in good positions here as of late. And, you know, also in that mix is the game against Wake Forest that is actually a non-conference game. In Carolina and Wake, two teams, of course, separated by only about 90 minutes or an hour and 15 minutes or so between Chapel Hill and Winston-Salem. You know, those are teams that just haven't been playing each other very much because they're in opposite divisions in the ACC. And so they got together a couple years ago and said, look, we'd like to actually play each other every now and then. And so they actually signed up for a home-and-home series that counted as a non-conference game. And so while Carolina does play Wake this year, a team that's gotten a lot better under Dave Clawson, that'll be a non-conference matchup. But, you know, you've got Wake Forest, who you mentioned. New Carolina's crossover opponent is Clemson. We know about the Tigers. That will be a challenge. But I think right now the most important thing for Carolina is the matchup with South Carolina. You know, that first game is such a tone setter for any team. And it doesn't make or break your season. You can lose that first game and recover, but it just changes the feel so much, especially in that first month or so, what you do in that first week. And, you know, we mentioned when talking about Larry Fedora a few minutes ago, mentioned that 11-1 season that he had in 2015. You know, Carolina lost the first game that year to South Carolina. And in a game, honestly, the Tar Heels dominated, played much better, but made some big mistakes and lost the game. And it really took a month or so to kind of get the momentum back and to get that good feeling again. And so, man, with all the excitement and energy around Tar Heel football right now with the changes they've made, it just makes that first game feel so important down in Charlotte. And there's so many storylines. Of course, Will Muschamp is a former assistant with Mac Brown at Texas. And, you know, there's all kinds of different storylines there between these two teams. Yeah, the first time that Mac Brown was here, the first game that he played as a head coach was against South Carolina, and it'll be the same thing this year. And so it's a big game for a lot of reasons for the Tar Heels. They'd love to get started in a positive way. And then, gosh, they jump right into conference play, not just conference play, but division play with a matchup with Miami at home the very next week. And so it is a tough schedule. It is a consistently tough schedule. And it starts from the very beginning where the Tar Heels will be challenged.
With that, we'll wrap up our time with Jones Angel, the voice of the North Carolina Tar Heels. And thank you, Jones. We appreciate the look inside North Carolina football.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and really looking forward to the start of the season.
Before heading out to fall camp, the Fighting Irish's Brian Kelly shared some thoughts on starting quarterback Ian Book.
I just think continue to work on his own craft. I think he knows the little things that he can be better at. I think he's already begun. I think Tommy Rees has done a great job of laying those things out. They've worked on them. He's just doing such a great job leading. His presence is one where when he asks some people to do things, they're doing it. I think what I see, a young man that is really confident in himself and holding others accountable.
It's Book's senior year, and the question is, who's next? Two players waiting in the wings, Phil Jerkovic and Brendan Clark. The fall camp may well decide who's backing up Book and is most qualified to step up if needed. And now, an in-depth look at what Manny Diaz brings to the Miami football program. Is this the year that fans can say the U is back? We continue the Voices of Football preview with Joe Zagacki, the voice of the Miami Hurricanes. A new head coach and Manny Diaz, plus our new offensive and defensive coordinators, are at the helm. Miami fans seem optimistic, to say the least, but understandably cautious. Is this a combination that gets the program headed in the right direction in their first year, or should there fairly be a caveat tied to them getting their type of players in the system, Joe?
Well, I think they've got the right players in the system for the most part, Jim. 2 years ago, Miami was number two in the nation, won 10 games. So fortune in college football these days changes quickly. 2 years ago, Miami won 10. Last year, they won 7. They have a lot of good players in the right spots. What they don't know about right now, and the right player has to be the quarterback, and that is the missing element. If they can solve quarterback, I think they've got a chance to have a very good season. But right now, they've got three guys competing to be the quarterback, and nobody has jumped out in front to take command or take that job.
We'll get a little more into that quarterback scenario here in just a moment, but tell us first a bit more about who Manny Diaz is and just touch on a little bit about who Blake Baker and Dan Enos are as well.
Yeah, Manny Diaz, a local guy, grew up in Miami and grew up rooting for the University of Miami, was going to take the route of being a television person, wanted to be a television anchor, was a producer for ESPN, then decided he wanted to get into football coaching and took the long route with his wife, went to Florida State as an intern, studied football there, really under Bobby Bowden, Chuck Amato, Mickey Andrews, Mark Richt, got himself into the business, and like many coaches, bounced around a little bit, became the defensive coordinator at Louisiana Tech, Texas, Louisiana Tech, Miami, elevated Miami's defense a couple of years ago, has brought a lot of passion and energy, wants the program to stand for toughness, a little bit of that old Miami personality as well. This is his first head coaching job, but has a very clear vision of what the University of Miami should look like. Perhaps his best recruit was Dan Enos. He got him from Alabama. Dan Enos was in town in Miami, coincidentally, the same time that Manny Diaz became the head coach at the University of Miami. Alabama was here playing in the bowl game, the semifinal game against Oklahoma. About a week later, Dan Enos contacted Manny Diaz and said, hey, I'd like to take a look at becoming your offensive coordinator. So Dan Enos, who has a very, very good background, was a quarterback himself at Michigan State, played under the great George Perlis, coached with Brett Bielema, coached with Nick Saban. He's got an interesting background in terms of what kind of philosophy he'll use offensively, but while he wants to be cutting edge and spread the field and have motion and all those things, he's not going to be afraid to line up in the I formation and try to be a power team as well. Blake Baker is a understudy. He's the defensive coordinator for Miami, comes from Louisiana Tech, shares the same vision as Manny Diaz and what a defense should look like in today's college football, and that is getting across the line of scrimmage, creating chaos, sacking the quarterback, getting negative plays. Miami has led the country or been near the top in those two categories the last 2 years. So Blake Baker is kind of an extension of Manny Diaz. He's this year's defensive coordinator, but brings that same attacking mentality to the Miami defense.
Let's get into the offense. We'll start with the guys up front. A sole returning starter in Davidson. Though this group is young, they do have experience. So, Joe, tell us more about what we're looking at here in what appears to be maybe a bit of a transition year for the offensive line.
Yeah, a lot of the offensive success or lack of will depend on the offensive line. And last year, I thought the offensive line was not very good. They lost Tyree St. Louis to graduation. Then they lost two other players. Boulware left early for the NFL draft and wasn't drafted at all, and was not signed as a free agent. That's been kind of one of Miami's problems, has been not being able to hold on to their own players. Hayden Mahoney, who would be starting this year, decided to transfer as a senior to Boston College. So Miami's got to find the right combination on the offensive line. They have a center in Corey Gaynor, who's been in the program for 3 years, did redshirt a year ago. He's physical and tough. Navon Donaldson has been an All-American. He plays guard. He'll play left guard right now. But Donaldson has been an All-American type of player for Miami. If they had five Navon Donaldsons, Miami would be a really, really, really good team. The right guard is most likely going to be DJ Scape. He's a sophomore, played a lot last year as a tackle. The problem area is going to be tackle. And right now, Miami is looking at two first-year players to tackle. One of those players at left tackle would be a true freshman lining up against the Florida Gators. So it's a bit of a jigsaw puzzle. They've got to get it together. But they face the very real possibility that whoever they play at tackle, it's going to be on both sides, both left tackle and right tackle, whoever those guys turn out to be, most likely it will be their first starts, and will come against the Florida Gators.
One of the terms that we hear a lot of in sports is quarterback competition. On the face of it, competition is just what a coach wants to see, though they probably don't always want to hear that question from people who are asking them in pressers that. N'Kozy Perry, Tate Martell, plus redshirt Jaron Williams. There's a nice lineup of players on the quarterback roster working their way through the system. Are we still in the competitive stages, or do we have a quarterback?
No, I wish we had a quarterback. And there are multiple reasons why Miami is in this spot. But let's start with N'Kozy Perry. He has the most experience at that position. Finished the season, for the most part, as Miami's starter. did not start the bowl game because he was quasi-suspended because of off-the-field behavior, and that's been his problem. Behavioral issues off the field have prevented him from taking command of this job. He's in his third year. He's a redshirt sophomore. And N'Kozie Perry, when he takes the field and he looks and sees that he's got two guys breathing down his neck, has nobody to blame but himself. He's been here for 3 years. He had a redshirt year 2 years ago. Last year, really did not take advantage of all of the opportunity that was given to him as the starter. When he did start, it came with mixed results. He rallied Miami in a game against Florida State. He beat North Carolina, where he didn't have to do a whole lot. He beat beat Pittsburgh in the final game of the season in one of the worst passing games I have ever seen in my life. But Miami was able to run the ball successfully. He had a terrible game against Virginia where he was pulled out of the game and was in and out of the Boston College game. So it was mixed results. Did play pretty good in a loss against Georgia Tech. Played pretty well in a win against Virginia Tech. In fact, he had three games where on third downs, he really elevated Miami's play, and it was because he was able to run. So he has shown flashes, but his immaturity has prevented him from taking that job. Jaron Williams is a redshirt freshman. Last year, he sat out, but again, he has nobody to blame but himself. Redshirted last year, but a redshirt year, you're supposed to learn. You're supposed to get better at your craft, and I didn't feel that he did that a year ago. So as a result, I think he's a little bit behind, trying to catch up, but he's got a lot of talent. Big kid, strong, has done a pretty good job of reshaping his body, very accurate passer. I would not be shocked if he wins the job, but he put himself in a position where he has a lot of ground to make up. And then Tate Martell transferred in from Ohio State. Martell had some game experience in Urban Meyer and Ryan Day's offense, more of a spread quarterback, more comfortable in the shotgun. Dan Enos does want his quarterbacks to take snaps from under center, but Martell has been a little more comfortable in the shotgun, very elusive in the pocket. His accuracy has been kind of hit and miss. He makes big plays at times, other times misses open receivers. So nobody has won that job yet. Somebody has to win that job before Miami gets to Florida. They've got to win that job a week before Miami plays Florida so everybody knows who the leader is.
Let's look at the running game. Dallas and Harris are two names that pop up. What can we expect from this portion of the Miami offense?
I think they're going to be pretty good there. They ran the ball last year for nearly 200 yards a game. DJ Dallas is a really good all-purpose player. Can run the ball out of the backfield, has put on some weight so that he can run between the tackles. You can flex him out. He can catch the ball. He can return punts. Returned a punt a year ago against Pittsburgh for a touchdown. Very able and willing blocker. A guy that just is a joy to be around. Plays with great joy and will be a real factor for Miami. Now, he's got to hold on to the ball. He turned it over a couple times last year. He fumbled the ball, got that reputation, and in fall camp has fumbled it a couple times. Cameron Harris looks like a natural. Could be the next great Miami running back. Last year flashed in games against Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech where he had big runs. Very physical player, has very soft hands, will do a nice job for Miami in the screen game or getting the ball in the flats. He is a guy that can give Miami the big play out of the backfield. Looking forward to seeing him. Robert Burns has been injured most of his career, even going back to high school, was considered a high recruit. People kind of ignored the injuries. If he can stay healthy, he'll give Miami a power back that they haven't had in a long time. A guy that can get that third and two and make you that first down. A guy that when you're in the fourth quarter and you need your fourth quarter offense and you need to control the ball, he could be that guy. And then the wild card is Lorenzo Lingard. He's a five-star player out of Orlando. Injured his knee last year late in the season. Right now is rehabbing to get back. I think he will be a factor. He's got the straight line speed. He's got a great body for a running back. Tough player, smart player, has a straight line speed. The question with him is going to be when it comes to maneuvering around the defense and cutting around the defense, how does he get over that mental hurdle? He has not reached that spot yet in his rehab. But if he gets all the way back this year, will give Miami some really good depth at the running back position.
Well, if we lock in a quarterback, there's some interesting pass options here. Thomas, Osborne, tight end, Jordan, slot, Mike Harley. Tell us a little bit about the wide receivers.
Jeff Thomas was Miami's leading receiver last year. He's about 5'9", 180 pounds, made some great plays against LSU, made some terrific plays against Florida State. Is a dynamic player, gives Miami a guy that's a threat on every down with a deep ball. You can throw him the bubble screen. He can run through the defense. You can give him the ball in a jet sweep. He can run past the defense. He can return punts. He can return kickoffs. Returned a punt last year for a touchdown against Virginia Tech. He's an all-purpose dynamic player, but he's got to be on the field. He gets hampered by injuries, and then at the end of last year had some problems off the field, was dismissed from the team by Mark Richt, was transferring to Illinois. But when Manny Diaz got the job, Manny Diaz re-recruited Jeff Thomas, brought him back under conditions, behavioral conditions, showing some more maturity, but he's got to avoid the injuries and off-the-field problems. If he does that, he's a hell of a threat for Miami. Brevin Jordan is a tight end, was an All-American, a freshman All-American last year before getting injured. He's a preseason All-ACC player, a guy that can command the middle quarter of the field, really good blocker, nice red zone threat, very good hands, very talented player, reliable. Will Mallory was injured at the end of last season, has a long and tall body, great reach, and I think is poised for a breakout season as part of Jordan's, as Miami in double tight end formations with Brevin Jordan, very reliable guy, very mature player, comes from a football background. Dad and grandfather were coaches, so he knows what it takes to be a player, player every day, a reliable player every day, consistent. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. KJ Osborne comes in from Buffalo as a grad transfer, put up very good numbers at Buffalo, and it's just been a dream for Miami. Has shown good leadership on and off the field, has demonstrated good hands, runs good routes, and I think is going to be a very dependable option for Miami in their passing game, and I think probably will catch between 50 and 60 passes this season. Mike Harley KJ Osborne is what Mike Harley is supposed to be for Miami. This is his third year, and just has not put up the numbers, does not have a touchdown to his name, and so Harley's got to start living up to his hype. Played high school football at St. Thomas High School, came in here with high expectations, and has been okay, but not great, so he's got to take a big leap forward this season.
Well, new coaches, certainly different schemes. So overall, what can fans expect out of the Miami offense this season?
They were frustrated last year that the offense was too predictable, that there was not enough motion, that Miami just ran the same play down after down after down. Coach Richt was kind of the theory of what I've been running for the last 30 years has been pretty good. It's worked everywhere, so it will work here if we execute it. But Miami did not execute very well. They had too many offensive line penalties, too many holding penalties, too many negative plays, too many drop passes. So under Dan Enos, the hope is, first, that the execution will be better, that there'll be fewer penalties, fewer negative plays, but also that the offense will be more cutting edge, more of what we see in college football today, more spread, more tempo, more motion, more misdirection. So all of those things are going to be input into the offense, and you hope that it will be a more quarterback-friendly offense where the quarterback will get rid of the ball in a hurry to one of these playmakers in space and then let them run for a first down, let them run for a touchdown. More cutting edge, have the defense on their heels more than what Miami has had in the last couple of years. That's the hope with Dan Enos as the offensive coordinator.
Special teams are going to be our transition into the defense. So let's take a look at special teams. Last year, punting, a bit of an issue. Have those kinks.
I would say one of the worst punting teams I've ever seen in my broadcast career.
Have those kinks been worked out this season, Joe?
I am hopeful. I am optimistic. Miami brought in punter Lewis Headley from Australia, which is all the rage now in football. The Australian punter who runs to the side and punts on the run. Headley comes in with the reputation of being a guy that can hang the ball up there and boom the kicks. In practice, it has been hit or miss. He has hit the ball so high sometimes, I think he's the reason that it has rained and sent Miami into the indoor facility. There are other times where it's just come out too flat. So that's a work in progress, but it can't be any worse than it was last year. Honestly, the punting game probably cost Miami several games because of field position. You can't give a team like LSU the ball at the 42-yard line all the time. Miami just, for whatever reason, and Fegels was their punter, and he had a really good freshman year, but then just mentally went haywire and shanked every punt. It was awful. So hopefully this year they can get the ball down the field. Bubba Baxter as a place kicker and field goal kicker, I think he's going to be all right. He's got a strong leg. He made all but three or four kicks last year, so I think he'll be good enough. And then the return game, they've got enough athletes where they should be dangerous between Thomas and DJ Dallas. They should be dangerous in the return game. Where they've got to get better is they've got enough players where they should block some more kicks, and they should be a little bit better in that area. But the big, big spot in the special teams is they've got to find a guy that can punt the ball down the field, a reasonable punter. It doesn't have to be, 50 yards on every punt. We'll settle for a 43, 44-yard average. Just don't shank them all the time.
Bubba Baxter qualifies as one of my favorite names in college football. Let's move on to defense. Last year, the pass defense, very, very solid. But defending the run, not so much. With Blake Baker, you have a really kind of a mirror of Manny Diaz. He likes to get after the ball. I think it's safe to say sacks and tackles for loss will continue to be at the top of the stats chart for this team. Let's put eyes on the line now. A couple of defensive ends, including Garvin, that looks solid, tackle Pat Bethel, transfer Trevon Hill, and lots of promise here. So tell us more about the defensive line.
Well, Garvin is going to be terrific at defensive end. He was Miami's best athlete in the offseason in terms of, conditioning and weightlifting and all of those things. He holds the award right now, the championship belt, as the best in as a weightlifter and best conditioned player. And he backed it up on the field last year at defensive end. He had a heck of a season, was one of Miami's leading sackers and a guy that created all kinds of havoc. Negative plays and gets into the backfield. And I would expect him to have another great season this year. He had 17 tackles for losses last year, nearly six sacks, recovered a couple of fumbles. So he'll wear the turnover chain this year. He's going to be a real menace for Miami at defensive end. They brought in Trevon Hill from Virginia Tech. I think he's also going to be a guy that is going to be problematic for the offense, the block. They lost Joe Jackson. They have Greg Rousseau, who's a really, really good-looking player. Now, he broke his ankle last year, so he's a redshirt freshman, but he stands at 6'5" or 6'6", 258 pounds, long and lean, and gets after the quarterback. They brought in a freshman named Jafari Harvey from Vero Beach, who is a real natural when it comes to rushing the quarterback, and I think he, too, is going to be a guy that knows how to get the quarterback on the ground, gets the quarterback, and is going to be one of those torpedoes off the edge. He's going to be a really good player. You mentioned stopping the run. I think for Miami, stopping the run is something they do on the way to the quarterback. You can't defend everything. Now, they've got to be better at stopping the run, and I think the way they do that is by getting penetration and trying to get in the backfield in a hurry. Some of those big, powerful, physical teams do give Miami trouble, and they always have: a Boston College, a Virginia. Obviously, if Miami never saw Wisconsin again, I think they'd be happy about that. They do have to replace Gerald Willis at defensive tackle. The last two or three years, Miami's been very productive at defensive tackle with Willis, McIntosh, and Norton. So now that's going to be Bethel and Silvera. They brought in a couple of transfer from UCLA. They brought in to strengthen that position. John Ford is the name that you need to be aware of. Jonathan Ford is a junior this year. When you look at him, you go, that is what a Miami defensive tackle is supposed to look like. 6'5", 315, 320 pounds. He's had a really good spring that's carried over into fall camp, but they need him to be the anchor of Miami's interior defense. And if he can stand in there, anchor the defense with Pat Bethel, and be a force at that position, I think Miami will have a very, very good defensive line. But I think a lot hinges on Jonathan Ford at defensive tackle.
So when we look at the linebackers, we see a lot of power. I mean, a lot. We got Quarterman, Pinckney. Who else would we be looking for there, Joe?
Zach McLeod, the three came back. And this is a real key. This could be a game changer, could be a program changer for Miami. The biggest problem the University of Miami has had, in my opinion, is not holding on to their players. Not enough guys coming in, too many guys going out, and they go out too fast. If you're going to leave, I get it. Go as a first-round pick. Go as a second-round pick. Miami's had too many guys leave as fifth-round players, sixth-round players. Guys don't even get drafted and they leave. But this year, Shaquille Quarterman and Mike Pinckney, the two, well, they would be their leading returning tacklers for Miami. Quarterman was second on the team in tackles last year. Pinckney was third on the team in tackles. Both were behind Jaquan Johnson, who graduated as safety. But Quarterman and Pinckney are seniors on the team. Miami very rarely anymore gets senior players. And what's happened with Miami is other teams' juniors and seniors have beat up Miami's freshmen and sophomores. Well, now they've got seniors at linebacker. Quarterman last year had 82 tackles, Pinckney 74 tackles. These are two guys that have started every single game in their careers at Miami. You just don't have that kind of experience anymore, and they have it. They're going to anchor the defense along with Zach McLeod, and just is going to make a world of difference. It could change the program, not only this year, but it might show other players down the road, hey, look at what Quarterman and Pinckney did. They stayed, and they improved their draft status, and they helped take Miami to what? To a championship, to an ACC championship game. We don't know that answer, but they're back, and we're excited to have them.
Secondary, Bandy, Carter, Hall, Blades, Bolden, solid group, to say the least.
Yeah, they lost Jaquan Johnson and Sheldrick Redwine. Now, Jaquan led the team in tackles a year ago and had two interceptions. Redwine was the fourth leading tackler, had a great season with three interceptions. But I do think there's enough talent back there to replace those two guys. You mentioned Bandy on the corner. Bandy's a junior, Columbus High School, came from Columbus High School, about 10 minutes away from the University of Miami. He had three interceptions last season, had 36 tackles. He's a dynamic player on the corner. He's not very tall. He's kind of a small guy, but he doesn't mind sticking his nose in there, making plays around the line of scrimmage, and he's always hunting for the interception. Bandy's a throwback to the old-time Miami corners. He's going to line up. He's going to talk to the wide receiver. They're going to have a lot of conversations during the course of the game, and Bandy's going to make a lot of plays. He might give up a few, but he's going to make a lot of plays. Where Miami needs to find an answer is opposite Bandy, and right now that is Al Blades is on one. Al Blades is getting a really good look at it, has a chance to make to be a really good player for Miami. Last year, he captained special teams a couple of times. Of course, his uncle's played at the University of Miami. His father played at the University of Miami. He gives the Canes a lot of length at corner and does a good job in man-to-man coverage. And there's DJ Ivy. Ivy's everything you want in a cornerback in terms of his size and strength and speed. He just needs to do it on the field. He's a true sophomore. I think he'll be the first guy opposite Bandy. Christian Williams is a freshman that came in from Alabama, a true freshman that's getting a really good look. Could be a factor this year. Amari Carter at one safety position. His problem is that he always looks for the kill shot. Amari gives Miami range. He gives Miami physicality. He just has to put it all together. Very smart player, very instinctual player, but just needs his entire game to come together. And then there's Gervon Hall. He wears number 26. Anybody that follows football knows Miami history, knows who wore number 26. If you wear that number, then you better play like John Taylor. That's how high the Miami coaches think of Gervon Hall. They think he's got that range and physicality and charisma to be that kind of player. Now, time will tell. He's a true sophomore. He's having a really good fall camp. But if he lives up to the number, then Miami's going to have a hell of a secondary.
The schedule, right out of the gate, in-state rival Florida. And it's a big game for more reasons than I have fingers to count on. Neutral field, the stadium is going to be packed. Crazy. Before we get into the ACC portion of the schedule, talk about the importance of Miami taking on Florida.
I don't know if I can properly articulate to everybody the amount of hate there is between Miami and Florida. It is and should have been one of the great rivalries. They played every year from the 30s until 1987. If you listen to the Miami side, it is they're afraid to play Miami. If you listen to the Gator side, it's we have too many conference games and can't fit you on the schedule. You're not that important to us. But it was a great rivalry. Miami has won 7 of the last 8 that have been played, including the last one in 2013. This game usually is one of the most intense, one of the most physical, one of the most hardest hitting games you'll ever be around. And surrender will not come easy in this game for either side. It is going to be a great matchup. Florida's going to be the favorite team this year. They're a little further along than Miami is at this point, probably because of their front 7 and their quarterback play. But in terms of the rivalry, it's going to be played in Orlando, which is considered a neutral site now. Orlando is about an hour south of Gainesville and 3.5 hours north of Miami. So it's not quite a neutral site. Going to have 65,000 fans in there. It is a celebration of the 150th anniversary of college football. We're going to kick it off in week 0, a week early, August in Orlando. I don't know of too many spots in the world that are going to be much hotter than Orlando in late August. It is going to be sweltering. So this is going to have all the ingredients, I think, of a terrific matchup, but the animosity between the two is at a fever pitch. It is about an 11 on the scale.
The challenges in the ACC schedule, they come mid to late season. Some of the projections hold true. Miami will be in contention for the division. Two division rivals, though, beg to differ. Talk to us about the schedule.
You know, most people think that Miami, after the Florida game, will be favored in every game after, except maybe at Florida State. And I might pull a Lee Corso on that one. And even though I'm the Miami broadcaster, I might say, not so fast, my friend. Everybody's counting on, they're kind of looking at that North Carolina game from a Miami perspective and going, okay, Carolina struggled the last couple of years. New coach Mack Brown, he fired Manny Diaz. Stacy Searles is there, Miami fired him. So there'll be some intensity in this one, but Miami would be the favorite team. The problem with this game is, for Miami, in my opinion, I can't remember the last time Miami played well at North Carolina, even when Miami's won there. 2 years ago, Miami won there. It was an interception at the end of the game that preserved the victory. 4 years ago, I think Carolina put 50 points on Miami. Then the one before that, it took a last-minute 99-yard drive with Stephen Morris at the helm and Dallas Crawford torpedoing into the end zone and basically the last play of the game to win. When Miami entered the ACC, one of their first losses, maybe their first loss in conference play, was at North Carolina in overtime. Maybe it wasn't even overtime. It was the last kick of the game. At the time, Miami was ranked number 5 in the nation. And really, if you want to go back and see where Miami's program started to jackknife, it was that game at North Carolina. Carolina comes back with a couple of running backs that Miami didn't tackle at all in last year's game. Miami beat North Carolina by touchdowns, defensive touchdowns. Joe Jackson had a pick six, and so did Romeo Finley. But Miami, I'm not sure that they tackled any of the Carolina running backs, so I wouldn't speed past that game. They do get Virginia and Virginia Tech at home and play Florida State on the road. And Miami, Florida State, no matter where you play, no matter what the teams are, how good, how bad they are, that game is always a jump ball. You would say, if you looked at that schedule on paper, you would say it definitely favors Miami. The tough games are at home. They also have a stretch where they don't leave here for five straight weeks. So that allows Miami to stay in South Florida if their injuries get healthy and not have to travel for a five-week period.
With that, we'll wrap up our time with Joe Zagacki, the voice of the Miami Hurricanes. Thank you, Joe, for joining us and giving us an insider's view of the program.
Jim, thank you. It was a great pleasure. Thanks. Look forward to a great ACC season.
Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation Podcast. Click on our subscription option or join us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, or Stitcher. While you're there, we'd appreciate a rating and or review. We're streaming 365 24/7 at ACC Nation Radio. We continue to be added to streaming sites, or you can simply visit us at accnation.net. And hook up. Be sure to follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Just simply type in ACC Nation. We'd appreciate you pumping up our Twitter numbers too with a follow as well. Wills at Wills World MN, Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACC The Q. Until next time, cheers.